Welcome to the Draft Savages NFL Draft Podcast. I'm your host, Seth Cox. With me tonight, my co-host, one of them so far, Justin Higdon. Justin, how are you?
I'm hanging in here. We got some warmer weather coming, but it's bringing some rain. So, you know, just still Chicago.
And with us tonight, we have two guests, and maybe Justice will show up. We'll see what happens. But we have two of the better young minds in the NFL draft Twitter universe, if you will. Joe Goodberry. Joe, how are you tonight?
Doing fantastic. How are you guys doing?
Doing great. And the one and only Mr. Aesthetic Twitter himself, Andrew Parsons. What's up, Parsons?
How much, man? Just living. How are you?
You know, just happy to be here, hanging out with you guys. So, this is kind of something that we've been working on getting together, and I wanted Joe on to talk edge rushers, front seven. I wanted Andy on to talk edge rushers, front seven. So I said, hell with it. We're gonna do a big round table again, and get two of the best guys on Twitter, and you know. Joe's writing it at Cincy Jungle. Where else are you writing right now, Joe?
That's it.
Just Cincy Jungle. And then yeah. Parsons brings his takes to Football Savages when he has time. But both of them both of them are very active on Twitter. You can follow Joe at Joe Goodberry. Spelled just like it sounds. And Parsons, you can follow at AP575. Both of them are great with NFL draft stuff, but especially right now, both are really keyed in with this front seven of the NFL draft, and that's why we wanted both of them on. The hope was that we'd get Justice around here sometime, and Joe and he could have this internet fight that we've all been waiting for on the draft prospects, because Joe's a much more tape heavy guy, would you say, Joe, as opposed to a lot of the metric stuff that Justice runs through?
Yeah, the metric stuff's brand new to me. I'm just now learning how to try to incorporate that in our grades. You know, it's tape. What do they do on the field? Besides that, I don't know how to use this stuff. It's all brand new.
And Parsons, you hit different areas each year. But this year and last year, to an extent, you were heavy into the front seven on the defensive side of the ball, just because, man, the Falcons need help in that area.
This is my favorite area to watch and evaluate. You know, I used to play defensive end back in the glory days. Just always been a position that I've understood kind of naturally. Always enjoyed watching it. I'd like to try and blend a little bit of what Justice does along with quote expertise, if you will. So I try and incorporate a little bit of both, but I'm not running T scores over here. You know, I'm just trying to watch a couple games.
I don't even know how metrics work. I tried to open my Excel file and my computer shut down. So I let Justin and Justice handle that. But and Justin, you just finished up some of your scores today, or yesterday, I should say, on these prospects and these athletics, you know, kind of spark scores. Tell us kind of how you finished that up.
Yeah, my formula, I call it the UPC, the Unique Performance Calculation. It's basically like kind of a spin-off of a spark. When I started reading some stuff on field goals, which is the SB Nation site for Seattle Seahawks. They have some really good guys there, Danny Kelly and Zach Whitman, Jared Stanger, and David Husu, who've all been really heavy into this spark. It seemed to be like something that the Seahawks were using to find like late round kind of diamonds in the rough type of players. So I tried to duplicate what Spark does, which is to use the 40 bench press. They use a powerball toss, but you know, kind of replicate it with the bench press, the short shuttle, and a vertical jump. And then I recognized that some of the NFL teams were really heavy into the three cone drill, and they do the broad jump too. So I wanted to incorporate those two things. So really, it's just kind of a cumulative measure, trying to find out who are the most like the fastest, biggest, fastest, most explosive athletes in a draft, and you know, conversely, I find out who are the worst ones, so to speak.
And welcome, Justice Mosqueda, to the podcast. How are you doing tonight, bud?
Good. Can't complain too much. I was taking a midday nap, and Andrew hit me up.
Surprise,
and
was like, surprise.
Where you at? Yeah.
Called it.
Yeah, no, we all figured you were asleep, so it's okay. Let's get started tonight, because I want to get this kind of going in the direction of what's talked about a lot on Twitter, what's kind of been bandied about, and we'll start with Joe, because Joe and I are the closest in terms of how we grade players. I won't say how we see players. We see a lot of different things, but I don't use metrics because, like I said, I don't understand how to use them. I'm not smart enough. But my stuff's mostly tape driven. Joe, I know you're the same way. So from just the tape, let's say straight edge. However you guys want to define that, it's up to your interpretation. Give us some of your top edge players, though, Joe.
Yeah, I got my board in my hand here on my phone, so. The guy who grades out the highest is Dante Fowler, but I don't think he's the best pass rusher. If you're going to look for the best pass rusher, I think it's Vic Beasley. He brings everything you're looking for, especially since he showed up bigger than we expected, put up good numbers on the bench. But on the field, I think he's got, you know, explosive first step. He gets around the corner better than anybody else. And because of that threat on every play, he brings it back inside and crosses the face of the offensive lineman, and they can't touch him. It's almost like Von Miller at times. And, I think if you're looking for the best upside or the best player, the guy you're going to want to take is Vic Beasley. The guy who grades out the highest for me is Dante Fowler because he's a little better against the run. He's a little more physical. He's got the size. He's probably better to play all three downs right now. Where Vic is kind of a liability against the run, what he showed on tape. I know right now he's bigger, he looks stronger, maybe he's better against the run now, but those two are the two guys I want.
Andrew, how does that kind of jive with what you've seen so far from the edge defenders?
Well, speaking of Vic Beasley at the Combine, while I'm here, I might as well pull out the chopper. Shout out to Phil Savage pretty sure, didn't he knock Bud Dupree and Vic Beasley for not showing up to his little game? They're probably doing some more combine prep and did more for their stock than playing in the Senior Bowl could ever do. I digress, though. Number one, probably after that, I'd probably go with Randy Gregory, all 210 pounds of him soaking wet.
Right.
After that, I'm still kind of grinding through because I'm still trying to go back to the grading scale I worked with last year, which is a combination of tape watching and then kind of adjusting for things like discrepancies. And I've graded out Dante Fowler and Bud Dupree extremely close. I'm going to have to just play with that because, I mean, we're talking decimal points there. And then after that was, I'm just going to call him Diggy. I think everyone can feel my pain on that one and recognize that Diggy is acceptable.
Justice, start with Dante Fowler because I know you, your grades, your force players' grades. He didn't make it, right? He didn't make the cut.
Right. He was an interesting guy because Andrew and I had conversations about him leading up to the combine. It seemed like the two fringe guys that we were kind of like excited about, but we weren't sure how they were going to test athletically, were Fowler and Dupree, and just drastically different combines. Fowler had a really good 40 time, and I know some people have credited that. I think, who is it, Joe Klatt of Fox Sports moved him up like 9 spots to his like second overall player because he ran a fast 40 time, even though he didn't do very good in the 3-cone or anything like that. I could see him being like a Chandler Jones type of guy. I mean, you obviously see the hamstring, things like that. His athletic upside, though, isn't – I just don't – like when you watch him – what do you say? You're like, oh, like we want to take Fowler early because he's this. I think Peter King mocked him second overall, compared him to like Jason Worlds and stuff. That doesn't seem like the type of guy you take second overall. I have a late first round pick on him. I think that's a fair enough grade on him. I see him as kind of a Jabal Sherd type of guy. He's gonna be good but not great. I really think that that's where I stand on him.
So how do you respond to that? Because I mean, I don't think Chandler Jones is a knock, but Jones was kind of looked at as a stiff player coming out that he had to either gain weight or lose weight to kind of find a position in the NFL, and he's done well in New England.
We're only so far removed from him playing, you know, 34 DN. I mean, he was playing there in the preseason.
Yeah, and he's had a little – he's been nicked up a bit, hasn't he, in New England? I think he's missed some games. So how do you kind of, like, take something like that where it's not really a knock on a guy, but it's probably not as high as you might see him?
You know, I don't think it's a knock. You know, you want good players. Maybe that he doesn't have the upside, and Justice says that, you know, athletically. And I think everyone can agree to that. But at the same time, you want to minimize risk, and Justice talks about this all the time. You want to, with tape and on the field, I think there's a lot less risk with Fowler, and I think that's going to be comfortable for a lot of teams to draft him because they know what they're getting, whereas opposed to some of these guys, like a Randy Gregory, is a complete projection. I think you have to trust in your strength and conditioning program. There's a lot you're going to have to put into him, whereas Fowler, I think you know what you're getting, even if it is limited upside. And it may be a knock for some people that are looking for the home run, but you know, once you get to like the 8 to 15 range, you just want to pick a good player, and different teams are in different situations. Maybe the Falcons just want to pick a good player, a guy that maybe isn't the best pass rusher if they miss out on a Beasley or a Gregory, but they want a player that they can plug in today and he plays right away.
When you look at the Falcons, Parsons, how do you, I mean, a guy like Fowler, he may not, like you said, he may not be the athlete that Coach Quinn will want, but he can do a lot of different things for Dan Quinn defense.
Yeah, when Justice first brought up the Jabal Sheard thing to me, that, you know, that clicked right away. I think in his first 2 years, Sheard had something like 8.5 and 9 sacks, something like that, when he was at his natural position. But I'm not sure he will ever be the spark plug type of player that Fowler is. You can tell he just brings something a little bit different to the game in terms of, you know, his run defense, his tenacity, his effort. You know, I'm definitely not a stickler for those things. I make fun of people for liking those things too much. You know, that's where Justice has maybe a late first, and I have more of a mid first on him. I think he's going to be a more productive player. He fits in well with someone like the Falcons. He's definitely a top 10 pick in the draft, no doubt.
On the other side of the coin, Justin, you got a guy like Vic Beasley, who I think every person on this podcast tonight would love him to find a way to their team. Is he kind of what Quinn wants, in your opinion, from that kind of Leo / linebacker position that he's ran some guys through recently?
I mean, if you follow Dan Quinn at all, from when he came to the Falcons, from his press conference to, you know, the few tweets he sent out, like, everything with him is fast and physical. You know, I know he's a little bit of a length freak, supposedly. That would sound more like Fowler, because I know Dupree and Beasley had shorter arms. You know, in terms of fast, physical, I think they want a real simple defense, just like in Seattle, you know, just kind of get after it. I think, you know, either Beasley or Fowler could fit in there. It's really who's going to be there.
Justin, what are your thoughts on Beasley overall as maybe the top edge guy in the class?
Yeah, Vic is a guy I know, like, Justice and I have been high on him all throughout the process and going back to last year. I think there was, you know, the fear was that he'd weigh 225, and I think that was, like, what people – one of the things that people used to kind of downgrade him. And then he comes in at 246. By my metrics – He was the most dominant athlete at the combine. And I think when you look at production, too, you're talking 25 sacks, something like that, over the last 2 years. Just, you know, the most dominant player in the ACC. So I think there's concern about can he play run defense. I go back to some games in 2013, and I don't know them off the top of my head, but where he was actually, you know, just blasting his way through a guard to make a stop at the line of scrimmage. So I think there's, it's there. You just, if you can coax it out of him. And I think maybe what Clemson was trying to do with this guy, because they have so many of these bigger five technique size defensive linemen around there, they just kind of let him loose. And he did a great job with what he was asked to do. And I wanted to add something real quick about Fowler, because we're talking about maybe a lack of, he doesn't have quite the elite athleticism that a guy like Beasley has. But one thing I like about Fowler is that he's only 20 years old at draft day. So he'll be a 21-year-old rookie, and I think there's something to that. This is a player, I think, he doesn't have the ideal height, but like Andrew said, he's got long arms. And with at age 21, I think we all know that you can get stronger. You can maybe improve on some of those areas of weakness at such a young age.
And Beasley's quietly old, right? That's what I read.
Yeah, we saw that last week, the tweet. and it led to my question, like, when do we start calling a prospect old? Beasley's going to, I believe, turn 23 in July. I don't think that's too old. So, no, I don't think he's quietly old. I think he's right about what you'd expect out of a fifth-year senior.
Joe, I wanted to pose this question to you, and this is from Darren Page of Twitter.com. I don't know if Darren writes anywhere anymore, so I'm just going to give him credit to Twitter.com. he was asking about guys on the edge that and teams, and I'm not sure, honestly, if the Bengals do or not, but you might, I mean, you obviously do know. Do they play left in and right in only, or do they flop sides?
The Bengals play left and right only.
So is Beasley a guy, if you guys have a right end already, is he a guy that can play left end, or is he going to get downgraded on a team that plays left right end only and then already has a right end in place, in your opinion?
I think it's much harder right now to find a right end. I think you can find, throughout the entire draft, and the value for left ends is second, third round, fourth round even. You can get a Preston Smith in the second round. That's a left end, and you're starting him day one probably. I think, anytime you have a Vic Beasley, I don't think you downgrade him because he's a right end. I think that's like finding a man corner. That's somebody that you can that's the value right there. That's somebody, that's your pass rusher. That's the guy who's going to split out a little bit wider, and you're relying on him to get the pass rush. So in the Bengals' case, they need a right end. And so I'm really looking at these guys as to, who fits them best. But if they have the size that they're looking for, and I don't think any of these guys fit. But, yeah, so speaking of left and right end, I don't think you would knock it. But if you didn't have a left end, this is a good draft for that, too, because just second and third round, you can find a bunch of guys.
Andrew, for you, you talked about Randy Gregory, and I want to get into this with all of you guys. But Gregory, what I think weighed 230, is that what it was, 235-ish? And, he wasn't a bad athlete at all at 235. I mean, he was a really good athlete, but I think there was some concern about maybe he wasn't as explosive as people were hoping because, with the size integrated into that. You talked a little bit about the strength and conditioning and things of that nature. Is he a guy that's going to have to play maybe off ball to start with and then drop down in pass rush situations, or do you bring him in kind of Alden Smith him, where all he does is rush the passer his first year and work him into the lineup that way?
You know what? I think the latter on that is more likely. I still don't think we know what his true weight can be. He obviously has the frame to hold more weight. I've been running through some kind of like thoughts about career arc types. I like this film a lot, but there's no doubt. You saw his thighs pause at the combine, and it looked like a high school wide receiver. It was a little bulk he had. A little bit of OCU Manura. People kind of think of a different guy now with the Falcons because he's kind of pudgy and slow now, but back in his day, he was real lean and just, that NASCAR package just coming around the corner as a third rusher. I think that's more of what you're looking. I always saw Gregory is somewhat of a smooth athlete. I thought he was more, faster than he was, but I've always seen him as smooth. I'm not sure if he's someone I want spending too much time in the open field, though. So probably more of a third rusher to start with than off ball.
Joe, is he a guy that can get a look at the Bengals, or is he just too light to play in that 4-3?
My system that I grade on, it's very Bengals heavy. It takes into account all the things they value at each position. Gregory is my lowest rated edge guy. That's taking out the run stopping guys. I'm talking just the pass rushers, right ends and stuff. He's the lowest out of all of them just because of his you know, at the height he gets the points for the height, but his weight is so below anything they've ever taken at as a regular defensive end. They'd probably try him at Sam linebacker. Michael Johnson at one point got down to 241. I want to say this was 2010 at camp. I remember the initial weigh-ins. It was 2009, Hard Knocks. The initial weigh-ins, they had the weights on the board. He got to 241, and that's at 6'6 and some change, almost 6'7. So that's comparable to a certain extent. Johnson was crazy Jack, though. He was strong as hell, even at 241. So they played him at linebacker that year, and then it wasn't until he got to about 275, 280 where you really saw him have a breakout year. And I think that for the Bengals, they would look for a Gregory to gain 30 pounds at least.
Justice, in your metrics, where does he grade out if you look at him as more of like as off-ball prospect?
One thing that I've found is that for linebackers, the standard for passing because of the density is so much higher. So I wouldn't say it necessarily that he's better, but I would say that you can get away with less athleticism at linebacker than you can at defensive end, if that makes any sense. Because so much of defensive end is the purpose of these 40 times isn't really to measure speed, it's to measure force, right? So what you're looking at when you're looking at these agility drills, you're looking at their ability to bend through contact. This is essentially how you're measuring this when you take account of their weight. At linebacker, you're moving more through space. So I would say speed matters less in like the weirdest way possible because you're actually moving through space instead of using that speed to generate contact. You're leaning more on instincts since you're moving like, you know, short area type stuff. That's probably where I'd play him. To be totally honest, I mean, you're looking at a linebacker. I know Andrew and I have talked about this where we talk about, you know, Manny Lawson and Barkevious Mingo and stuff like that. And Andrew was saying, you know, he's a fast dude with a high motor, so he could be, like, sneaky good as a run defender and things like that. That's pretty much how I look at him now. You know, same type of range as Fowler where you're like, I don't think he's going to be amazing, but I think he's going to be a solid player. If you play him at, you know, say if you want to play him at Sam, I could totally see you taking, you know, him in the late first or early second.
He's your number two, Parsons. How does that, you know, what do you think of something like that?
You know, I still really kind of haven't really wrapped my head around just how ridiculous that combine was. I have to see how much I'm going to change his number. You know, I definitely think he's going to be a valuable player. He's going to be an asset. Would anyone here just think that he gets out of the top 10, though?
No.
I think there's a, you know, he might not even get out of the top 5. I could see the Redskins being a pretty logical landing spot. What to think exactly, career arc? I think they obviously the elite upper echelon one you're going to look at is Jason Taylor. But, you know, I don't see him being, it's the only way I can put it. Still kind of unsettled on where to value him exactly, though.
A guy you brought up a little bit earlier, Joe, was Preston Smith, and we had a question on him. I think I gave it over to my other account. Hold on. And what do you think his best fit in the pros is? You kind of hit it at 4-3 left end, but can he be a pass rusher or is he a 43 left end to you?
I think he can be a pass rusher if you're willing to kick him inside the defensive tackle and nickel. That's where he's going to make his money, as a pass rusher at least. He, you know, his athleticism, he can't bend around the edge like a normal pass rusher on the edge. But when you kick him inside, that's not an issue anymore. He becomes more athletic than the guard. And, you know, that's when he really looks at his best. And if you're willing to do that, and if you that's a position you need, some teams won't do this. Some teams will just probably keep him on the edge and bad teams draft and they do these things and they misplace players all the time. But if you kick them inside, you're going to get a good value with them.
How did he grade out for you, Justin?
He was outstanding. I mean, what he did at the combine at 270 pounds, running a 4.7, all the numbers across the board pretty much were fantastic for him. So I do agree with what Joe said, though. If you watch him, he gets a lot of his pressures up the middle, looping around, even lining up inside. So I think there's going to be some adjustment if a team's going to want to line him up on the edge. But I think he can do it. He's got the physical ability. One of the things that I noticed, and this is probably a function of how they schemed their defense, but you know, Preston Smith only really has 1 year of big-time production at the college level, and that was this past year. Before that, he's just kind of a run stopper, kind of an edge setter. And it almost reminded me, if I watch like 2013 tape of him, it reminds me of like watching LSU defensive ends. It's boring. I don't enjoy it. I enjoyed him a lot more this year, and I think when he went out and did what he did at the combine, I think it gives you know, a lot of if you got a creative mind for defense, if you want to, you know, this is a big, fast, strong guy. You're going to probably want to try and use him a little bit differently than he was used in college. But I think you can legitimately use a first-round pick on him.
I want to get to this kind of Ben thing, and it's something that Andrew, I think it was Andrew that talked about it on Twitter, and Justice, I think it was the two of you in the conversation together. And I think it was about Diggy that you guys were talking about, and can he bend around the edge? And were you guys talking about that's overstated sometimes on like how much a player can bend the edge versus how much they actually need to do it in the NFL for, you know, when you're kind of a speed to power type guy like Diggy is? Was that you, Andrew?
Kind of a combination between me and Justice. It's something we talk about pretty frequently. No, I think people overstate that because they're always, you know, that's an easy to see when someone's tight coming around the edge or when they're like real Gumby-like and easily bending around the corner. I think it's overstated because most of the guys with tight hips, they're going to win with power. And more critical for them than being able to bend is being able to win the leverage battle. That's something that Diggy's very good at. You know, he's able to generate a lot of force because he can sink his hips. He can't bend his hips, but he's able to sink them enough where he's able to use his unreal power. That's an area right now where Bud Dupree struggles. You know, he can't bend either, but he also doesn't understand leverage concepts nearly as well. And even though he's, you know, his force grades, I'm sure for everyone are, you know, off the charts, you don't see him generate nearly as much power. So it's more about the, you know, if someone can't sink their hips or bend their hips, that's a problem. But being, you know, Gumby coming around the corner, that's not something that's a baseline requirement at all.
With a guy like Diggy, Joe, is he a guy that you want standing up and coming off the edge, or do you think you can put his hand in the dirt in a 4-3 and let him go?
I'd prefer him with his hand in the dirt. I think some of the bend, some of the agility we talk about, you do see the tightness in the hips. I think if you're putting him at linebacker, that'll probably expose him a little bit more on a few short drops. You know, it won't be a big issue. Most of these guys that are going to play 34 outside linebacker, they're rushing 90% of the time anyways. I think dropping into coverage gets overstated for these guys. But to talk about, you know, being overstated with being able to bend, I think the guys that can't get around the corner on the outside, their inside moves become less effective. They become more predictable at that point because they're no threat to get around the edge. So, you know, you don't see offensive linemen overstep any and let them get that advantage back to the inside. So I think it's, you know, while it may be looked at a little too much if guys can get around the edge, I think it's important in finding those guys that are elite players that can do both, because once they can is when it doesn't matter how good you are as an offensive lineman, you're going to get beat because this guy can beat you anyway.
Another guy that, has really taken off since the combine but maybe his production didn't match Justin was Bud Dupree, and we've talked about him tonight a lot. Why on his tape is he not as explosive as what his numbers were?
That's a good question. I don't know. I think, you know, one of the things I thought was interesting because of how he's another guy like Preston Smith, 270 pounds, but Bud Dupree ran a 4.55 or something like that, a ridiculous speed, over a 40-inch vertical. And, yeah, that doesn't really show up. I don't know. You know, I liked some of what I saw from him. He's got high effort and, you know, he's – but he doesn't – I think Andrew touched on it. He doesn't have the long arms that you would expect out of a guy that size. So maybe he gets locked up a little bit. And he doesn't have the he just doesn't – he doesn't really seem to know the finer points. I mean, that's really what I noticed with him. It's kind of like we always hear people talk about raw players, projections. And when I watched Bud Dupree, that's really what I came away with, is like a guy who is just really not sure what to do with his brute strength, with his speed. And as a result, it doesn't really show up. So I think you – with somebody that talented, with that much elite athleticism and potential, he's going to get drafted highly. But I could see why some people are going to have their qualms. I think he did pretty well with the production. You know, you see, I think 7.5 sacks, which isn't great, but it's still better than what Diggy did. And that's a guy who I think also didn't really produce what you think he should be capable of. Only 12.5 sacks for his career in 50 games, and that really stood out to me.
Joe, I was going to bring this up with both Diggy and Bud. Something that Ryan Riddle hits on a lot is about the lack of coaching up that happens once somebody gets into the NFL. Very few teams, you know, I don't want to say get a prospect's full potential, but maybe that is the best way to put it. You see the potential with the athleticism in flashes, but they never reach that potential. Maybe it's the coaching staff, maybe it's the player, maybe it's a combination of both. For guys like Dupree, Diggy, even like an Eli Harold, you know, those guys that maybe didn't produce as much in college, is that a concern when you draft somebody, or is that just kind of the roll of the dice of the draft?
That's definitely part of the roll of the dice. I think, you know, a lot of the upside guys get taken early. You know, it's the guys that are good with upside, the Vic Beasleys that go early, and it's guys like a Bud Dupree. And we talk about weight so much, and he was 269, but he's the one that looks like he's 225, you know, just because he can't use any of that weight. He did without the length and without the leverage, without good hand placement. You see a guy like that, and you go, okay, he's got the body, he's got the athleticism. There has to be some upside here if we can get him to, if we can unlock it somehow. I don't like the guys that have started a lot of games and still haven't come close to their potential. Those seem like the guys that aren't going to reach it. It's the guys that have played maybe 1 year, maybe a year and a half, maybe 2 years at most that seem to, you know, have a chance to unlock the potential. Maybe that's just my opinion, maybe what I have observed. But the guys that have played for 3 years, have started for 3 years, maybe even more, I don't know how much more you're going to get out of them than you've already had before.
You know, I think just one real quick, one more point on Dupree. You know, I felt like I saw this a lot on tape, but, you know, I hate to say stuff like this, not knowing, especially for a prospect I like. But Bud Dupree is just not a very smart football player. And you know what? You read the Bob McGinn article that comes out every year, and basically the scout put him on blast and said he's pretty dumb, and he scored like a 10 on the Wonderlic or something like that. So I don't know how teams personally evaluate that, but that's something you have to look at. You know, I think there's a specialized role where you can get a highly productive player, but you know, it's definitely a roll of the dice. You're going to have a lot of faith in your coaching staff. I'm not intimately familiar with everyone's staff, but you know, there's someone if the Falcons took, I'd be, you know, extremely happy with, just based on the fact that we have a defensive line, former defensive line head coach, and a good D-line coach. But I can understand where if you're a team that's notoriously not good at developing players, say like the Redskins, for example, you'd be very weary of that pick.
Anything else on the edge, guys? I know that's probably the second biggest debate outside of Mariota Winston, which we shy away from on this podcast as much as possible because Justice is an unrelenting homer. But
we get to talk about Shane Riddle?
I'd like to talk about Shane Ray.
Go ahead. Get us started on Shane Ray.
No, he's just not very good. And I just want to remind everyone that there were people saying that he might go number one this year.
Yep, that was a thing.
That was a thing? Where was I?
It was definitely a thing. Top three was popular that became number one.
I think there's still people mocking him in the top five. I think I just saw him to Washington in a mock draft today. So
Pauline wants to break Andrew's heart. Like Pauline keeps saying that the Falcons are going to take him.
I would not be shocked at all, and I would just be hilarious. Another draft day meltdown would be great.
He really got left behind in the combine, didn't he? I mean, that's the only guy not working out. Everyone else looked pretty good, you know. And now he's sitting here. Look, you know, where is he late? Where is he standing?
Shane Ray also looked pretty fucking fat at the combine. Excuse my mouth.
we're already explicit on that.
He's a pudgy motherfucker.
Andrew says he looks fat, and the dude weighed in at like 240.
but Andrew's part of Aesthetics Twitter, so he's got a.
I have to chime in on these things. Yeah. Just like Henry Anderson, real good football player, but he looks like the beer league superstar, you know, MVP of the beer league with his farmer's tan and beer belly.
Anything else on the edge players in this draft, Joe?
No, I don't have anything else. I think we covered it. I do like Eli Harold, though. As all the athlete guys, once you get past the first two or three, if I'm going to take a guy in the late first, maybe early second round, I would take an Eli Harold. I think, you know, he flashes so many athletic plays, and I don't just mean athlete-type plays. I mean football athletic plays where he's chasing a guy down from behind, where he's making a play in the open field against the run. Maybe he's just his hands land sometimes, and sometimes they don't, and I think he's very inconsistent that way. But the flashes of the upside are there, and he's a guy I would gamble on. I may take him over Bud Dupree because he's a guy who hasn't learned to take that next step, whereas at least I feel like with Harold, you know, I don't know that he can't take that next step.
See, Harold scares the crap out of me because I went back and watched him after I saw his combine numbers, and I'm like, okay, so he's really fast. I mean, that's very obvious.
And then you flipped on that FSU game, right?
Oh, my
God. Terrible. Oh, my God. It's so bad.
That was bad.
Cam Irving, it's and he terrible. Just bounces off. Yeah, that game scared the crap out of me. And I was like, no, not going to end good.
You know what, based on that one, I would lean a little bit more towards what Justice is saying, but you actually mixed it up earlier, Justice. I said he's someone like Mingo who could, you know, even though he hasn't lived up to his pass rush billing, I know he's been hurt and whatnot, but he's actually a much better run defender just because of how fast and active he is. You know, he's someone I could see being a piece, you know, just based on that, but I'm not in love with him at all either.
We had one question, and well, we have multiple questions, but we have one more question on the kind of edge rushers. Which edge rusher is the best fit at like a 3-4 outside linebacker, in your opinion, Andrew?
You know, that's not something that's really important to me. obviously, we kind of touched on that. I don't know who asked that question. Not one of your better ones whoever picked that, but I guess Gregory, just because, you know, he's a wet blanket, and he just, I don't know. Let's go with Gregory.
Joe, what do you got?
They're all, I only consider the edge guys as the 3-4 outside linebackers or right defensive ends. I think the game is nickel either way. If you're wearing about 4-3, 3-4, you're 5 years behind us.
Before we move on, I just want to give out one shout-out to my friend Anthony Ciccolo. I think he's going to be a very nice little player for somebody in the round three. I'm biased towards Miami guys all the way this year. It's the only year it's going to happen. Nice hat, Justice. But I think he needs some love in this.
He's a guy that we've talked about a little bit on here about he showed up at the combine, and I don't want to say surprised, but I think people after – he was the Shrine Game where he kind of dominated, wasn't it?
Yeah, he was down at the Shrine Game. you know, kind of opening eyes at practice, and I think that's where everybody started to realize, like, what the hell is Miami doing with this guy? This guy could have been so much better than what they were letting him do. And then he was in the game kind of wreaking havoc. So I remember during the Shrine game, which was just a dreadful thing to watch this year, but one of the more entertaining things was when Chicolo was interviewed on the sideline and kind of just threw his coaches under the bus and said, like, yeah, see what happens when, you know, you cut me loose. And he's got a point, you know, and I don't know what they were doing with him. He's one of the more impressive guys by my measurements, and, you know, over 260 pounds running a sub-4.8. And everything he's done since the season ended has been outstanding. It's just that he looks average on paper, and that's something that people are going to look at. I think he's one guy I would take a gamble on saying that he was used incorrectly.
Going to the off-ball linebackers, there's really, like, two in this class that anybody talks about. A couple guys are now getting a little more run, but let's start with the bad, and that was Paul Dawson at the combine. Those were numbers that I'll probably put up in a couple weeks here after I keep working out. So get ready for this AFL combine over here. No, I'm just kidding. But you have a guy that didn't look that unathletic on tape, and then he goes and posts just pedestrian like numbers. Joe, we'll get your take on the tape, but Justice, let's start with you and your force players. He's not even close, right?
No, he had a very bad combine. Yeah, to say the least. But I would say I'd revert back to saying I'm not sure how much these numbers really mean for linebackers, because a lot of it's based on instinct and short area quickness. So, I mean, that 40 time does translate to how fast you're going in short areas. But I think how quick you're able to react to a play can easily make up for the speed that you have. And I think Dawson kind of displays that. That being said, I mean, it sounds like his character concerns are, like, consistent but not terrible, or it's just, like, late to practice, that type of stuff. I talked to a scout last week, and he was like, yeah, I brought up him to Green Bay, and he, like, laughed. And I was like, what? He's like, Ted's not taking a guy like that. It's like, okay, well, guess that kind of confirms, like, what everyone else is saying.
Joe, what did you see on tape, and how different was that from, I mean, everybody was surprised, but how different was that from what happened at the combine?
Sure, it was surprising, but I don't think 4.9 is surprising, don't get me wrong. But when people were starting to compare him to, like, a Telvin Smith and things like that, just because he plays in space doesn't mean he's athletic. I think sometimes we watch on tape, and a guy, you know, these they're playing against a spread offense. These guys are running around in space all the time, and we assume they're athletic. I expected him to be a little less, you know, explosive than what some of the people were putting out there before the combine. I didn't expect 4.9, of course. But, like, you want to compare him directly to some guys that are better athletes, like a Shaq Thompson. He plays faster than Shaq because linebacker takes instincts. It takes awareness. It takes your reads. You know, there's so much that goes into it mentally. You just have to have a feel, a natural feel for playing linebacker, and Dawson has that. His short area quickness, he can build up his momentum very quickly, and that's something like Denzel Perryman can't do. And so while he may have run that slower 40, I think it shows more about his character than what it actually shows on his field. Because you see him, that tweet after, whatever a tweet means, but, you know, he's like, I'm a football player, I'm not a track athlete. Yeah, but you're out there competing. Don't you want to compete at everything? Don't you want to be the best at everything? That's how I look at it. And you hear these reports, and it piles onto everything. It just makes you concerned with that side of him.
Andrew, have you watched Inside Linebackers? Am I allowed to talk to you about this?
Yes, I've seen him. You know, actually, my first introduction to him, my introduction tweet was, you know, I think Draft Twitter is really underrating Phil Dawson. Phil Dawson, of course, is the kicker, but you know what? They're pretty much the same athlete. Spiderweb looked like a freckle on a child. It was ridiculous. He's, you know what? I actually did see a lot of those deficiencies on tape. It's not overwhelmingly apparent, but he is slow in his transitions and change of direction. What he is very good at, I think, though, is dancing around blocks. You know, you're not dealing with really sophisticated offenses out there. You know, it's I know he got a lot of billing for being instinctual, but I don't think, you know, I've been putting Josh on blast for this since he said it. Comparing him to Levante David is absolutely ridiculous to me in terms of instincts. Levante was otherworldly. I don't see that from Dawson at all. You throw on the Baylor tape, that's somewhat new. I watched that this afternoon. Within the first five plays, you see him get outrun and then juked in the open field by Bryce Petty, who ran a similar 40, I think. So, you know, it does show up on tape. Yeah, and he's just an embarrassment to the combine. Yeah, that's all-time bad.
I want to touch on this.
I'm glad I was able to pop off a nice joke at his expense, too. So thank you for setting that up. It's awesome.
I want to touch on his combine results here real quick, guys. You know, Paul Dawson's results, when I put him into the UPC formula, he tests out in the same area as stalwarts like Kalen Clay, Braylon Hurd, Colorado State linebacker Aaron Davis, Memphis guard Al Bond, and some kick returners, Christian Jones and Marcus Murphy, who ran in the 4.6s. So this is a guy who, you know, if you had no exposure to Paul Dawson, and we already know that NFL teams flat-out strike players off the board sometimes because of poor testing, right or wrong, we know it happens. And this is a player who, if you had no exposure to Paul Dawson, the linebacker, or Aaron Davis, the linebacker from Colorado State, and you look at their test results, they look like the same player. I like Dawson pretty well on tape, but when I factor these kind of results in and minimizing risk and that being your goal, I don't think I could pull the trigger on a player like this until a third round, like compensatory pick range at the earliest.
He's a day three pick.
Yeah, I mean, some guys are going and saying seventh round undraftable. I don't think he is a seventh round player on tape, but you have to factor this in. You can't ignore this. This is ugly.
Let me throw out a name that somebody brought up to me on that he was on Mock Draftables, and then I kind of watched it, and I kind of see it, and that's Larry Foote, you know, linebacker for the Steelers. Never really great, but always somehow in the NFL for, what, the last decade, you know, 12 years. And you look at their webs on Mock Draftables, and it's pretty much the same player. Foot ran like a 4.83, you know, same type of jump and explosion numbers. Is that kind of where he's at now after we had heard Levante David type talk beforehand? Is that what he is now, a fourth, fifth round inside linebacker prospect, kind of only in a 3-4? You really don't want him on the edge in a 43. Is that what you see, Andrew?
I mean, if I'm not mistaken, isn't Larry Foote, if he doesn't retire, he's about to be a coach?
That's right, yeah. For the Arizona Cardinals.
And Dawson can't even show up to practice on time.
They don't show that in the
Spider
chart.
So, yeah, so I don't think, you know, he's not going to survive. I wouldn't touch him until the sixth round, maybe. You know, he's just bad at this point. There's too many things stacked up against him. I don't like to take character into consideration too much, but when you're a piss-poor athlete, you have numerous reports from everyone. You know, you don't need super in-depth sources to find people knocking Dawson and exactly what he did. And as Joe said, you know, he doesn't appear to have a very good attitude about it either. He even said, I think in an interview with a sports journalist, said, yeah, my teammates will say I'm a knucklehead, but, like, come on, guy. You know, there's just nothing impressive to me to say anything more than a six-rounder, to be honest.
On the opposite side, you have Shaq Thompson, who maybe wasn't quite as explosive as we thought, but, I mean, he's a good ball player. I think his times at least quelled that move to safety talk that we had seen a little bit. Joe, what are your thoughts on Shaq? I know you said on the film he doesn't look as instinctual at linebacker as maybe Dawson does, but what are your thoughts on Shaq?
He's a ball watcher. He stands around a lot. He lets plays develop. It looks very, his mind is working slowly. It looks like it's still a little new to him. Maybe that's if you're a fan of him, that's what you'll say. He's still learning to play linebacker. But he just kind of sits around until there's a play to be made. He just has a knack for the ball. I can't explain it. It's like Tim Tebow at linebacker. He just makes a play somehow, and he changes the tide of the game, which is awesome. And I think the average fan gets so consumed with those plays. When you look at the other 80 plays on there, they're very average, and he looks very average to below in a lot of categories. He's an athlete, and right now he's probably just a nickel linebacker, and you just want him in space, really.
Andrew, before the combine, I think we saw Shaq mocked upwards of 5. What is he now? Is he a late day one type, or what are your thoughts on Shaq?
I would roll the dice probably late round one. Anything top 15 is a little bit wild to me. He's a talented player. I agree a lot of what Joe said. Kind of going back, we talked about this on Dante Fowler. If I'm not mistaken, Shaq just turned 20 like a month ago, maybe a little bit more, but he's really young. He's obviously, with the baseball and everything, he's obviously a prodigy of sorts. Probably a little bit more dynamic than he showed up on tape. If I'm not mistaken, there was some discrepancy potentially in his 42. I think they compared him to, they did one of them, and he looked faster than his time. Late one, early two seems like a pretty perfect range. I think the most logical comparison to me is something that popped off right away. Thomas Davis for the Panthers. Similar profile, beefed up, got more instinctual as time went on, and became a very good player in between blowing up his knee like 6 times. But I think that's what you're looking for with your upside. I agree with Joe's assessment. I think late round one, early round two is a sweet spot.
Justin, were you surprised by his numbers at the combine?
No, I'm more surprised that you said he was in at the 5th spot in a mock draft. I think
it is the Redskins. So.
Yeah. Well, we don't know what they're going to do. So we're mocking everybody to the Redskins that we're not really crazy about, like Danny Shelton. But with that, I think what you guys are saying, Joe was really spot on. I think ball watcher. I hadn't thought of it in that way, but if you think about the plays that he makes, like scoop and scores, he's just kind of standing around the pile and the ball pops out, he picks it up, he scores like 3 or 4 defensive touchdowns this year, and it looks great on the highlight reel. I don't know if any prospect this year was done a greater disservice than Shaq, because he's being yanked in and out, offense, defense, for entire games. He's being played at running back. There are, Dan Jeremiah has mentioned it several times on Twitter that he's talked to personnel people who want to grade Shaq as a running back. I disagree with that. I think if you're putting him at running back, you're banishing him to like the middle to late day 3 range. And as a linebacker, I think you can develop him. He certainly tests and looks more like a productive linebacker than a future running back player. So I would put him as a day 2 pick, but I don't think I would go first round with him. There's too much work to do. And like both these guys said, his instincts need some work. And I don't know that how well that's something that you can develop.
A guy that's been talked about in the first round, all of a sudden, Justice, I'm going to butcher his first name, but Stephon Anthony, Steven, I don't know how they pronounce it. The kid out of Clemson, inside linebacker, all of a sudden getting talk in the first round. I never saw it. I saw Joe do some Vine work on him. I think it was last week. Where is this coming from? Is this just a dearth of inside linebacker talent, so we're trying to push guys up that maybe fit the mold more?
Yeah, I think so, and he had a really good combine. I mean, he ran, what, a 4.56 or something like that, and he almost ran a sub-7 three cone and almost ran a sub-4 20-yard shuttle. So, I mean, athletically, he did very, very well. On the field, I'm not sure you see all of that, but I definitely would take a shot at him and try to develop and get that out of him. Right at first round, man, that's high. I don't think there's a first round linebacker except for Shaq Thompson. When we're looking at, off the ball guys at least. I really wish Perriman would have done better because I think I would have taken a shot at Perriman at the end of the first. But with his combine, I just don't even think it's worth it. Stephon Anthony's probably a guy who's going to go, like, in the third round or something like that, unless something crazy happens between now and then when people start digging and they start seeing more and more. The one guy I could see being a riser is Eric Kendricks, because he's probably thought of in that same range, that second, third round fringe range, and he's an athletic freak. I mean, if people are freaking out about Stephon Anthony's combine, when they see Eric Kendricks' pro day, they're going to, like, crap themselves.
Joe, what were your thoughts on Anthony, and then any other inside linebacker talk that you want to end with here?
Before the combine, we had a second, mostly third round grade on him. We thought he's probably a and I say we because I got a guy working with me doing linebackers this year using my scale, and he's a big fan of him, but. He looked athletic, but he looked stiff, and I think you see that on tape, even with the combine numbers. He has some missteps way too often, and I don't think he's a special athlete. He may be a good or a plus athlete, but only the special guys can really have this many mistakes or false steps or slow reads and make up for it athletically and still get in position to make a play. I think Anthony is a good prospect. I'd take him in the second and third round. I think if you're taking him in the first, that's too rich for me. I don't think any off-the-ball linebacker is really valued in the first round. I don't know why you would do that. If you just look at the past few years in the second round, some of the best linebackers in the league are all being drafted in the second round. That's the sweet spot for running back and linebacker. I would take Kendricks, so if I'm going to take any of these guys, I think he has the blend of everything we're looking for, whether it's run defense and pass coverage. I think he might be the best in coverage. He's athletic. He's instinctual. He makes good plays on the ball. He lives within 2 yards of the line of scrimmage. When he looks forward and closes on a guy, he closes quickly, and his tackles are form, and he drops them 1 yards, 2 yards, 3 yards from the line of scrimmage. He's all over the place. If I'm taking a linebacker anywhere in the top 40, it's Kendricks.
Denzel Perriman's a guy that's been mentioned, Andrew. Close out this linebacker, off-the-ball linebacker talk. What are your thoughts on Perriman and just kind of the class as a whole?
Oh, is that addressed to me? You were cutting in and out a little bit.
Yeah, to you, Andrew.
Perriman, I'm kind of with Justice. I'll say it a million times over. This is the 1 year where I'll be biased towards Miami. But I was expecting a better combine. You know, if you seeing him in person, he again paused, but he's a thick dude. You know, I expect him to blow up the combine in terms of a 10-yard dash. Obviously, he has those tree trunk type legs. I expected a much better broad vertical. I expected all of that from him. Then you go and look at the tape. I don't think he trusts what he sees a lot. I think he overestimates his athletic ability a lot. Because you see him when he's able to square someone up. It looks like Ray Lewis. But, the rest of the time, I've seen Joe and I think Alan Dumanjic say this a couple times. The rest of the time, he's looking like old Ray Lewis, who was overrated and pretty much a product of what was in front of him. I think one of the big plays that stood out to me last year, I know me and Eric Stoner brought this up about a million times when talking about Dee Ford, was watching A.J. McCarron accelerate away from him in the open field. With Perriman, I saw him come on, I believe, a blitz or a delayed blitz to come get Jameis Winston on a rollout. And, Perriman wasn't able to change directions and close the gap to bring him down for a sack, which you know, Jameis, what was it, 4.93, 4.98, that's something you absolutely have to do. And,
yeah, that's Paul Austin's athleticism.
Exactly.
He's a two-down linebacker.
Anything more than a short zone drop is asking too much. I think the best you can hope for is Curtis Lofton. Curtis Lofton was a lot more instinctual as a run defender. I think Perryman's a lot more powerful, but, yeah, a little bit disappointing for me.
We'll end tonight with the maybe the least sexy group of prospects this year, and that's the kind of defensive linemen, 34 DNs, and all the 4-3 down linemen. Leonard Williams is getting some billing. He's a good ball player, but I've seen J.J. Watt mentioned. I don't see that at all.
And heat on that one.
I haven't understood it. I've seen Richard Seymour mentioned a little bit. I don't see that either, but maybe, I mean, maybe flashes of old Seymour, but not, you know, young Seymour. Joe, we'll start with you, film watcher extraordinaire. What do you see in Leonard Williams that makes you say, yes, this guy's a top five pick, or no, I don't see it?
I don't know if he is a top. I think it'd be much easier to convince yourself if you're running a 3-4, or maybe you're running a hybrid type of Seattle defense where you can you can move him around. I think you're gonna have to move him around. I was talking. I can't remember who it was, and now that we're having a conversation of what do you do with him? Is he a, if you're a 4-3 team, are you going to put him at defensive tackle? Because I think he plays a little too upright. I don't think he really attacks and can penetrate. He's more of a two-gapper where he's going to, play his role that way. I wouldn't keep him at end either. I think he's a 5-tech, and you're going to kick him inside a nickel, and you're going to get his best value that way. I think that definitely hurts him. How many 5-techs have we taken in the first 6, 7, 8 picks that have actually panned out and been studs or guys, cornerstones? It rarely happens. These guys are getting 5 sacks a year, and it's not all sacks, but you know what I mean. They're just not turning out to be stud players. J.J. Watt should not be compared to anybody. He can play any position. He could play outside linebacker in a 34. That's not Leonard Williams. We're talking about a completely different player. I think he is advanced in many ways for a guy who's young, for a guy who has, only 2 years, I think, starting experience. His hands are good. He's powerful. He closes quickly. I don't think he's very explosive. I don't think he's very agile. I think he stands up a little too quickly. There's shoulder concerns, I guess. I have my concerns for maybe the best prospect or the safest. We always get into the safest guy as being the best guy. I don't know how safe he is. I don't know how much upside there is. Some guys love him and think he's going to be a stud. I don't know if I see it.
The guy you just described sounds like a Mike Smith Falcons pick to me.
Pretty much, so. Yeah, absolutely.
But look at Dan Quinn, and if Dan Quinn pulls a guy like Leonard Williams at 6, or is that where you're 7? I don't even know.
Eight.
Yeah, somewhere around there. If he falls there and he's your base left end, and then kick him inside on passing downs. I mean, is that something that you would be okay with, or is that just not that? That's a building block outside of a. Instead of a playmaker, what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, it would be kind of like Jake Matthews last year. I wouldn't be heartbroken by it. I wouldn't be happy with it. I think Joe really hit the nail on the head with him as a player. I really don't have anything to add. Just the only thing I would add is, I don't see the Tyson Jackson comparisons. As someone who had to suffer through watching Tyson Jackson play football last year, he's awful at football. Leonard Williams is so much more depth. The only thing similar about them is they both have really strong hands, but then Tyson just pretty much just sits his fat ass in a gap. He's gotten really fat since he came from LSU. You see a lot more lateral ability from Williams. The comparison I like, Seymour is too rich for me. The one I liked as an upside, a higher high-level comparison was Aaron Smith from the Steelers. Kind of similar builds, real solid football player, maybe a couple Pro Bowls sprinkled in, but, never anything crazy. But good fit for the Jaguars, I think. That'd be a real nice fit, especially since they're about to spend a ton of money on defense. So they can take a guy like that, but I think like the Falcons need more impact players than Leonard, and then another Leonard Williams type.
I mean, Jackson did have to, what was he, 4 years, 5 years in KC? That's a lot of barbecue you can eat. I can understand exactly. Overweight in Kansas City. Justin, on your scale, what? I mean, he didn't really move the meter at all, did he?
No, Leonard Williams kind of grades out in that middle tier. Like I have him color coded. He's right in the third tier, the yellow area, which is. That's not terrible. I mean, it's not a kiss of death at all. I think that's just kind of where you want to start to pay more attention. I'm really, I'm not crazy about picking guys, you know, high that are below that area, but in that same area, I've got guys like Amari Cooper and Ty Sambrella, who, you know, both of whom I like quite a bit. But then if we're talking about number one pick, then I think there are legit concerns. And Joe touched on some of them, and one of the things he mentioned was the shoulders. This is a guy, Leonard Williams says he played last year with two torn labrums in both shoulders. So he did not do the bench press at the combine. I'm not worried about him not doing the bench press. He looks strong, but he looks like a run stopper. That's what he does. He stops running backs. And, you know, he'll get the occasional sack. He's hustling. But I've seen him ranked as an edge player, and that one is just – I don't understand that.
Right.
No.
And that's kind of why we never mentioned him in the edge players in this conversation. Justice, you voiced your concerns pre-combine about Leonard Williams, and then the combine kind of just – fired those up even more. What other defensive tackles or you know, down linemen do you see in this draft that you would take over him because of the athletic upside? Maybe not, you know, at the 5, 6, 7 pick that we're talking about, but just a guy you would rather have?
Man, I'm not sure. Leonard Williams probably is the best defensive lineman, like interior defensive lineman in this class. I'm not really big into Sheldon. We've gone over that. I think he's a fringe second, third round type of guy. I can see someone like talking themselves into Carl Davis, because Carl Davis is going to go way higher than people are projecting right now. And the only other guy he's going to be a Packer. The only other guy that I can even like think about putting up with him is like Eddie Goldman. Like, I'm a big fan of Eddie Goldman. And he's just a giant. Like, I don't understand why he isn't the top nose tackle in this class. Is it just because Shelton got sacks?
Yeah.
Hey, speaking of Shelton, I wanted to get to this while we're on him. We got a question about Shelton from Twitter, and it's from Davey at Charlie's War Chest on Twitter. And he's asking us, can Danny Shelton transform his game playing at 320 pounds rather than 340 pounds? I'll start us off. Short answer, no.
Well said.
The problem, and we've talked about this a million times with Danny Shelton, is we were expecting a guy that was Dontari Poe or Haloti Ngata as an athlete, and he's Dan Williams as an athlete. Now, don't get me wrong. I like Dan Williams. He's a good ball player, but he played 36% of the snaps for the Cardinals. So are you taking a nose tackle only that's going to play 30 to 40% of the snaps in the NFL in round one? Like Justice said, why are we not talking about Eddie Goldman or, you know, even like a Carl Davis ahead of Danny Shelton? Maybe not at nose tackle for Davis, but guys that can do more things. Something I haven't understood. So that probably means the Cardinals will draft Danny Shelton at 24. I'll just have to get over it. So.
Well, another thing is, I mean, Shelton went through a workout process to get his weight down. I mean, that's essentially what he's been doing since he's been out of school. This 340-pound Danny Shelton, that's as light as he's going to be in his NFL career.
365, he looked.
Yeah,
At the combine, he weighed like 345, and people were saying he was like fist pumping and stuff. He was so excited about weighing 345 or something. Yeah. That was ridiculous.
Yeah, that was at the Senior Bowl. And
Senior
you know,
Bowl, yeah.
I'll say something about this guy. At 340 pounds, the fact that he cleared 30 inches on a vertical, that's pretty impressive. He did like what, 37 reps on the bench, but he runs a five. He runs like a Rich Eisen time. I think he was slower than what Roger Goodell timed. So this is a player. He is a pure nose tackle at the NFL with those kind of with his measurements, with his testing, with his tape. I mean, and like Seth been saying, and we've taken some heat at Draft Savages for not praising Danny Shelton, but I think this all adds up to a guy who's a second or third round pick, and like I think Justice has been comparing him to Brandon Williams. Would you take Brandon Williams in the first round? And I would not.
Yeah, and Brandon Williams is another guy. He hit 29.5 on the vertical at 335 pounds, and he also ran a really slow 40 time. I mean, their numbers are really, really similar.
Malcolm Brown's kind of a guy that some people really like, and then some people don't. I honestly haven't watched him hardly at all. Have you watched him at all, Parsons?
I'm sorry, you cut out.
Malcolm Brown. Have you watched Malcolm Brown at all?
Oh, yeah. I've seen some people really, really high on him. You know, I think he's all right. I think he's a solid football player, top 50 type grade, but he's not a top 15, top 20 guy for me. I just don't see him being overly effective. He does a lot of things pretty well, overwhelmed by his game. But then again, this whole class is, that's where I graded him out as the top 50 pick, but, that might end up being a, top 20 player once I, stack everyone up. But, just wasn't overwhelmed, but...
Joe, you're shaking your head in agreement a lot. Is that with sentiments on Brown or just this class as a whole that guys that are in your top 50 are going to end up being in your top 20 because you just don't have anybody to put there?
Yeah, I think there's a gap after like the top 12 where your next 40, you can shuffle your deck and, every team's going to have it differently. And we can have a guy that's 80 going in top 15, top 20, really, just depending on fit in the team. And especially we're talking about the defensive class here. Malcolm Brown grades as my highest, but I don't love him. I like that he's good at almost every phase of the game, shows some athleticism, played all across the defensive line, can rush the passer, really good against the run. So you like that he can play all three downs. But if I want a guy, I want Eddie Goldman. I love his size, his athleticism. He closes so quickly. When he defeats a guy and throws a guy down, he is on the quarterback in two steps. He really looks like a defensive end sometimes, just the way he can shed guys and throw them down, and he's on the quarterback. And then against the run, you can see the progression he's made from the previous years. And if you talk to any Florida State guys, they'll say he's really gotten better against the run. He's really become a complete player. If I'm going to take a guy, I think he's got upside, plus he's good right now.
One with this, and then Parsons, you can go first. Right now, what is it, March 2nd? I don't even know what day it is. March 2nd, if you're making a pick for the Falcons, who's your guy at 8?
The God, Vic Beasley, of course. No doubt for me, no doubt. He's probably just going to be 1-1 for me, so. Yeah, so young Marcus Ware.
So you're going to get Shane Ray, and you'll like it.
No doubt.
Joe, I don't even know where the Bengals pick.
21, again, every year.
Oh, yeah,
quarterback purgatory.
You're in that 20 to 24 range every year. You're gonna,
21, exactly.
You're going to hang out there. Who's your pick at 21?
If I can have anybody, I want Lael Collins. He grades out as the number one player in this draft for me. I think his upside, plus he's good right now. I can play him at four different positions on the offensive line. He's got the demeanor. He's got the physical ability. I want him if I can pick anybody. I don't think he gets there to 21. At that point, I start looking at defensive tackles. I'd love if Eddie Goldman's there. I'd love if Malcolm Brown is there. If not, you start taking a risk on some of these edge guys that maybe an Eli Harrell at that point is as high as he goes. I would. They're going to take like an Eric Flowers, and I'm going to be pissed. But that's just how it happens.
Collins, Anthony, or not Anthony, shoot. Who's your left tackle that's been there like 30 years?
Andrew Whitworth.
Yeah, Whitworth. He was an LSU guy too, right?
Yeah, and the Bengals offense, they really don't ask their offensive tackles to do much. They really only have to pass protect maybe 5 to 10 snaps a game. It's mostly 3-step drops. If there's any long play, it's on play action. So, you know, well, Collins could play left tackle for the Bengals. I know some teams don't view him that way. So if he's a guard on most boards, he could make it to 21. The Bengals would run to the podium. Everything that I put through that says who they'll like, it's Lael Collins.
Parsons, any parting shots on this this draft class as a whole?
No, just pretty pedestrian, pretty boring. You know, I was hating it, and then I watched a little bit, and I started like, all right. And, you know, then I got above, like, the initial, like, 15 or so, and it's like, all right, I really don't want – I might not make it to my target of 50 prospects this year. I'm kind of bored. We'll see.
Talk about Michael Bennett for a second, because you were talking about him in the group chat with Honks, and that's one guy that me and Justin like.
Yeah, I think are we like the only people who see Michael Bennett as a first round pick? I mean, I don't know that, man. I know people were kind of down on him early in the year, but if you watch the last 4 or 5 games, which, you know, was the same games where people wanted to take Cardale Jones as a first round pick, Michael Bennett's over on the defensive side dominating, and before that, I think. You know, it's not always exciting, but he's did a lot of facilitating earlier in the year for Joey Bosa, and toward the end of the year they had to kind of shift their attention. Teams had to shift their attention over to Bosa. That left a lot of opportunities for Bennett. I think he's kind of undersized, and I think that's why people aren't crazy about him. But he's gonna go work out. He chilled out at the combine. With his whatever injury, and then he's going to go work out and blow it up at Ohio State Pro Day like they do, because that's the fast track. They've got the strength coach. He's going to look pretty good, I think, when all said and done. And it's a guy I think more people should be talking about.
Yeah, agreed, absolutely. You know, no surprise here, but Stephen White did a really good article on him. I mean, I watched 2 games like an hour before I came on here. Then I searched him to try and find like his combine stats. I didn't realize he hadn't worked out. Saw that article, and it's kind of funny because I watched the Michigan State game first, just like Steven did. And in that game, you see him get wham blocked to the ground like 3 times, falls for like 5 wham blocks. Double teams are just sending him flying back 8 yards. But then you just start watching all these plays that he racks up. You know, they're all splash plays, but he just keeps making so many per game. Then he gets better, as you said, as the season goes on. And you think about people like Kawan Short, who had so many terrible plays in college, but then you got him on a better pitch count in the NFL, and he's a stud. You know, just people like that really flash through your mind.
Joe, any parting shots on this this draft class?
Overall, it's kind of disappointing. I feel like we've had 2 good classes in 2011, and then 2014 were great classes, and then we're sandwiched with 2012, 2014, or 2015, where we're just, you're going to have to pick guys that fit your system. This isn't a draft. I'd want to have 10 picks. This is a draft, you know, you might even trade back and try and get picks for next year, just because you're so unsure about so many guys. Do you take the guy that has the high upside, or like in a Randy Gregory, or do you just take the safe pick that, you know, maybe you're only getting 7 sacks a year out of Dante Fowler? Every team's going to be different, and I don't know what side I even sit on right now.
Yeah, something we've talked about, and you know, Andrew and Joe just brought it up again, but something that we've all said on this podcast before is after like 12 guys, just throw them in a hat. Like you said, it's just going to be, you know, what a team likes. And you'll see some, you know, things like last year where the Cardinals took Deion Buchanan at, you know, 28 because they needed a safety that could play inside linebacker as well. And it works out. I mean, you know, Buchanan wasn't great, but he was impactful, and he had flashes of really good moments. And I think that's what you're going to see a lot of that this year. You can even talk about a little bit with, you know, Brandon Cooks in New Orleans. You know, maybe that wasn't the smartest pick, but they needed that element because of the loss of Darren Sproles, and so, you know, they traded up to get him because that was the guy they felt like they needed to grab, and, you know, when he was healthy, it worked. He just couldn't stay healthy. So it's one of those weird years where you're going to see a lot of guys or a lot of boards that are going to just be in, you know, complete disarray, and nobody's going to agree with anybody. You know, I saw Josh Norris's top 125 today, and, you know, there were some, like, really interesting names in the top, I think it was, like, top 15 or 20 that probably are going to go second or third round, and he's going to get crucified for that, you know. So it's one of those things in a weird year, so, you know, it just – enjoy it, I guess, as much as you can. Find the 12 players you like, Andrew, and just keep watching them.
You know, if Josh still has future UDFA Paul Dawson in his top 15, he deserves all the criticism he's going to get. I haven't looked at him yet, but I'm getting on him.
He's actually at 18.
I'm going to keep retweeting where he called him.
I think it was Hank Jones who said, he's Levante, I'm Levante.
Yeah. All right, guys. Well, I appreciate it, and we'll have you both on again later as we start doing the team focused draft talk, and you guys can rant and rave about your quarterback situations and your need at pass rusher, and it'll be a fun time. I know Andrew's always got a lot to say about the Falcons.
A lot of heat.
So yep. we'll have to bring out the censor button so I can we'll have to get on a 7-second delay for Parsons and his Falcons. Joe,
sounds right.
You know, for me, best Bengals guy on Twitter, so I really appreciate you hanging out with us tonight.
Appreciate it.
Justin Justice, we'll do this again next week. I think we're going to have Ian Wharton back on and talking DBs and finish up this draft prospect talk so we can finally get to team specific after free agency starts and the Jaguars and Raiders sign everybody. So,
real quick before we get out of here, just want to thank everyone for listening out there. Remind everyone that you can subscribe to us at Draft Savages on iTunes and Stitcher. You can follow the podcast at Draft Savages on Twitter. Thanks to our guests. Have a good night, everyone.
Yep. Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.